Digital has given every voice a platform. Will yours be heard? If there is one skill that everyone needs today, it's not just the ability to communicate, it's the ability to connect. My mission is to give you the communication skills you'll need to inform and inspire, sometimes using digital tools, but always with human outcomes. I'm Craig Thomason, and this is our first official show. Thank you so much for joining me. And you know, when thinking about who to bring in as a guest, I wanted someone who really understood how to communicate effectively. And let me tell you something, I found one of the best, Kimberly Afonso. Now, Kimberly is a global digital marketer and founder of a remote digital marketing agency. She currently lives in Milan, Italy, and has professional experience in the United States and throughout Europe. She partners with clients in the startup, software as a service, and business-to-business sectors, and she specializes in social media content and management, growth marketing, email marketing, paid ads, and digital strategy. Her strong international background allows her to work with companies that are looking to enter into the United States and entrepreneurs who are in need of strong personal branding strategies. Now, in her free time, Kimberly is an avid yogi and loves to travel. And on average, she works away from home 5 months out of the year. Let me tell you, we had a great conversation. We spoke about digital marketing, branding, and social media and how it's changed our political landscape and can be used as a force for good in the fight against inequality. Let's get started with our show. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Craig. It's so great to be on the show. After hearing your pilot, I was really excited to be able to connect with you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. You are our first official guest, and so thank you so much for connecting all the way from Milan, Italy. I was hoping that you can tell our audience a little bit about your company, what you do, and who are some of your customers.
Sure. I'm happy to share and really happy to be your first guest. So I've run a remote digital marketing agency. I always wanted to have a remote business because I think it's the best way to connect with people around the globe. And basically, we work with a lot of startups here throughout Europe and also in the US and run all of their digital marketing campaigns. So this includes social media marketing, paid advertising, and email marketing. Some of my clients are Unico Bag, Unico Aero. Those are two Silicon Valley startups, Gabriel's Vault, which is a legacy messaging platform, and then some other ones in the local European market, such as Gopion, which makes cases for different works of art. So you can kind of see they're all over the board, but most fall into the startup category, and many others are looking to enter the US market. So that's another strength of why they choose to work with us.
Now, you said that you truly embrace the remote working culture, as you and your team are completely remote. How important, then, is communication and keeping you and your team connected? I mean, is that really the glue that keeps you connected?
Yeah, so actually, one of my employees is in Australia, and the other one is in the US, and another one is here in Europe. So we're all over the place, but I always wanted a remote business just because when I worked in different businesses myself, I really felt that the 9-to-5 doesn't work for everyone, and that flexible working is just a way to really integrate all different types of people and backgrounds into your business. And communication, like you said, is really important. So we usually communicate either every day or every other day via Slack. So technology makes it really easy. The key is being flexible, I think, when you have a remote company. So it's really important to be open and know that maybe some people on your team won't be available all of the time. So be flexible with that. But I honestly think that many companies can embrace a remote working culture if they want to. It's not as difficult as you think, because when you give people flexibility, they usually embrace embrace it, and we'll make things work around, you know, either a meeting a bit later in the day or earlier in the morning if they have to. So I haven't found it that challenging, actually. I think that most of my employees also feel very empowered because they have more freedom. So this also puts, you know, that freedom for them to schedule their day the way that works best for them on themselves. So with that freedom, they know that they have to, you know, meet the goals that we set together.
You know, that's pretty interesting. Do you think that's given you an advantage, especially when it comes to working with startups? I mean, they're notorious for the hours they keep.
It's definitely given us an advantage. I definitely think so. Like I said, I work mostly with startups, and like, you know, most of them work crazy hours. So we're really used to being flexible, you know, to having meetings with people here in Europe or all the way on the West Coast in the US or wherever it may be. And I also travel pretty often, especially between the US and throughout Europe. So that's definitely given us an advantage just to be able to adapt to making different calls work. And also in general, the great part about my team is that everyone is really motivated because I love to work with people who are really specialists in what they're doing. So one person on my team is an amazing graphic designer and has a lot of experience working in graphic design with startups, while another one is really analytical. So by being able to partner with them from all over the world, I think it's been, you know, a really key advantage in the growth of my company.
That's fantastic. You know, Slack is a pretty cool application. I guess you could say it's sort of like your home office if you're a remote-based team. Has that been your go-to application?
I think, it definitely depends what you need to do. So we definitely also use Skype for video calls or other video software, like, you know, FaceTime, for example. But I think Slack is just the go-to because it just makes, you know, team communication so easy. So I think it's a tool that I've really seen take off in the past few years. But it's really, like you said, our home office. That was a great way of putting it.
You know, I'd like to switch gears for just a moment. You know, we introduce you as being out of Milan, Italy, but in listening to you, it sounds like perhaps you're not originally from Milan, Italy, but from the United States. Tell us about your story, how you ended up in Milan.
Yeah, I am from the U.S., so it's kind of a crazy story. I never thought in a million years that I would live in Italy. But I moved to Barcelona. That was a personal choice about 4 years ago. So I graduated from college in the US. I worked a bit in the US after college. And then I always wanted to work abroad. It was always my dream to have more international experience. I studied international business at school, and I also did a study abroad semester that I think really inspired me back then when I was in college. So it was always my dream to work abroad. I had a job opportunity in marketing in Barcelona, so that's how I originally moved abroad. Then I switched companies in Barcelona, still working in marketing. And then after that, my partner had a job opportunity in Milan about a year and a half ago. I never thought I would ever move to Milan, but I thought it was the perfect time to also start, you know, a new life for myself. I was always really entrepreneurial. I always wanted to have my own business. I always knew that that was something I wanted to do eventually. So I saw this move as actually the perfect opportunity for me to start that. So it was great timing. And even though I never imagined living here, I've seen so many opportunities in the local market. I've been able to build a business remotely, which was something I always wanted to do. And the quality of life is really nice. So I'm very happy with it.
That's really nice. Sounds like a win-win. But I guess there were some inherent challenges. For instance, did you know how to speak Spanish or Italian before you embarked on your journey?
I knew how to speak Spanish, mostly because I'm American, but my father is Portuguese. So I already knew how to speak Portuguese when I was young, and Spanish was pretty similar. So I learned Spanish in high school, and then a bit better in college after my study abroad, so I knew how to speak Spanish when I moved to Spain. I didn't know how to speak Italian, but I have learned over the past year. The good thing about Latin languages is that in the end, they are pretty similar. So that's definitely helped me, and that's definitely been an advantage. But of course, whenever you move anywhere, there are things that are, you know, culturally shocking or surprising to anyone, even moving throughout different countries in Southern Europe where the culture can be kind of similar.
I bet you had some really interesting stories. You know, what you said just a moment ago made me think, for those who are thinking about perhaps starting their own business, but maybe in college, maybe still in school, would you recommend that they should study abroad? You know, here in the United States, we have such a U.S.-centric view on things, and I'm wondering if having time in another country could change that since, you know, in the work world, we're constantly dealing with global colleagues. What do you think?
I totally recommend study abroad to anyone who can do it 150%. It was the one experience I had in college that really changed my life. Even if it doesn't help you from a business perspective, it just will help you from a life perspective because you're able to culturally open your mind so much and understand how different people think, which is really, that was something that was so eye-opening for me to really understand how people can think so differently than we do in the US. It just becomes such an advantage in life. I think it made me more empathetic. It made me more understanding to all different types of people. And then in a business context, you're really able to understand why people take certain actions from that. So I think in every aspect of life, study abroad is so useful. I'm such an advocate of it.
I really appreciate that. And I bet some folks who are listening can really, you know, understand how they could benefit from that. So let's talk about where your education led you to. So, you know, you're doing quite well in marketing. But from the research that I've done, it appears that while men and women have equal representation in the marketing workforce, men still have the lion's share of senior or executive roles in marketing. Has that affected you being a woman and owner of your own marketing company?
It definitely has. I am an avid feminist for that reason, because I've seen a lot of injustice and inequality in the workplace over the, you know, past 5 years that I've been in the workforce. I think I saw, you know, more equality when I was in college. And when I entered the workforce, even in the US, it really hit me that, you know, not everyone was equal. And I still, unfortunately, do see that today. If I'm going to be honest, the situation in Spain and Italy, where I work, is, you know, unfortunately worse than it is in the US. There aren't as many protections just legally for women. So there is a lot of discrimination in the workplace, which is unfortunate. And it definitely has affected me. When I worked in other companies in Spain, I saw many instances where I thought things were completely sexist. And I tried to speak out against those things when I could. I was still young, so you can't always, you know, voice your opinions, unfortunately. But when I felt that I had more power in a position, I tried to voice that. And now that I have my own business, I'm definitely much more comfortable and an advocate for voicing when I see inequality, and at least in my business, trying my best to fight against that. So, you know, if I ever see any behavior that I see inappropriate with a potential client, luckily it doesn't happen often, but if I do, I always speak out against that. Because, you know, I think in the end, at least the small things can make a difference until there is a policy change in some of these countries that I work with.
That's absolutely powerful. And later on, we're gonna circle back and talk more about marketing and the political and social arena. But I wanted to shift gears for just a moment and talk about marketing in of itself and how much has changed. even in the past several years. Now, you specialize in all of the key areas of digital marketing, and one area that's received a lot of attention recently is social media marketing. Now, before I even ask the question as it relates to social media marketing, could you just give our listeners a 101 of what social media marketing actually is?
Sure. So social media marketing is when a business decides to post content strategically on any social media platform. So some businesses may choose to only post content on LinkedIn. Others may do an entire strategy on all of the platforms like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And others may choose a few of the platforms and also combine that with paid advertisements to increase their reach. So it's basically using social media from a business perspective.
Okay, thank you for that definition. So are you finding that small businesses are playing catch up when it comes to social media marketing? Whereas, say, startup companies, and I'm assuming this, but startup companies really recognize the power of social media marketing. And I even wonder about larger companies. Are they in the catch-up mode as well? So I guess my question is, where are companies right now as it relates to social media marketing?
I think things are changing, and more businesses understand the importance of being on social media. I think that there aren't enough marketing dollars sometimes allocated to that. So a big error that I do see with small businesses is having people internally run their social media marketing, but doing it in a very informal way. So they don't have a clear strategy and they're just posting the same way they would post to a personal account. And then they don't see any results. So really, even if you invest in, you know, a small marketing agency or a small marketing consultant to help you when you're a small business, I think that's a good investment to get you off of the ground to, you know, get a clear social media marketing strategy that will work for you. And that's kind of where I see the disconnect still with social media marketing, is that sometimes companies don't know that it's something that they should invest in a marketing professional to help them with.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. What are some other best practices you've taught your clients to help them build their presence and influence in the social world?
So there are many best practices. I would say that it's really important to have employee advocacy, especially if you have a company that has a lot of salespeople on LinkedIn. So it's great to, you know, encourage employee advocacy, encourage employees to post on their personal feeds. That really helps companies grow. One company that I personally see doing a great job of that is The Wing. They're a women's working space that has different locations all over the US. And I think they have about 150 employees. And I see a lot of their content reposted by their employees. So they're doing a great job with their employee advocacy. So I would say that's really important. I would also say that it's important to have a clear strategy with what type of content you want to post and what is the purpose of that content. So are you trying to build brand awareness? Are you trying to drive sales? If you're trying to do one of those two things, the post may be different. So it's always important to think of what is your end goal. And also, it's very important to remember that social media is a long-term strategy. So I think a lot of businesses think that if they spend a bit of money on Instagram or Twitter for, you know, 2 or 3 months, they're going to drive results. And that's just not realistic. It's good to look at social media marketing as a long-term marketing investment. So you will really see your ROI 6 months to a year down the road. So it's always important to keep that in mind, that it's not going to be a quick thing to really increase your turnover. It takes time. You have to really, you know, study what's working best and then optimize from there.
You know, many people today fancy themselves as brand experts. I see that a lot on Instagram and definitely on LinkedIn. If someone were to make that claim to you, how would you vet them? What questions would you ask? You know, we're talking about how many companies now are looking to leverage social media marketing so that they can get ahead of the game, but they need someone who's an expert to help them to win it. And so they need to know who they're getting in the game with. So what kind of advice would you give that way?
I think definitely what you're saying is true. And this is why I really don't look into titles anymore, because I just feel like if you see, like, I see many people who have the title freelancer who do a great job, and perhaps their job is the same as a consultant or brand expert. So this is why I think in 2018, we have to be really careful when we just judge people by their actual title, because the same can go with, you know, CEO or whatever it is. But I would say, good question to ask when it comes to your social media marketing, you know, brand expert or consultant or whatever it may be, would be to ask some brands that they've worked with before. So it's great to see their portfolio. It's also good to ask them what results they think that they can get you on social media. So it would be a red flag to me if a person said that they can get you a ton of results really quickly, like without a high ads budget. That means that they're not going to be organic leads and they may not be as valuable for you. So that's always something I would ask. And it's also good to ask if they have any recommendations in the field or just some examples of key, you know, ROI that they have gotten their customers. So it's kind of hard to measure ROI with social media marketing because it's a long-term investment, but this is a question where you can kind of see, you know, how good the person really is and if they have a long-term vision when they work with their clients. So I think one of the best things to look for when you're working with anybody is to make sure that they, you know, are committed to working with your brand long-term, if it works well for both of you, because that's going to be where you really get their input on strategy work. I mean, even if someone's just doing you a strategy for LinkedIn marketing, you will probably still be having calls with them 1 to 2 times per month. So you want to make sure that you can find someone that can really help you with your strategy along the way, because if they're good, that's what they're going to be doing. And those insights that they give you are going to help you with your entire marketing strategy down the road.
Excellent. You know, in my pilot, I talk a lot about how people have become really enamored with the technical tools and put the majority of their focus on that. And without question, it's important to focus on technical tools, but from what you're saying, the focus really is on human behavior and outcomes and what's going to garner the attention of potential clients. Is there a percentage then that you could cite that you focus on? Is it like, I don't know, 80% human and 20% digital? I'm very curious about that.
I would say, yeah, I would say it's about maybe 70% human, 30% technology. So in marketing, definitely knowing the technology tools is really important, but the creativity and driving the brand message is still what works in digital marketing, just as it does in, you know, traditional trade marketing. So I had more experience in trade marketing before I moved to, you know, completely working in digital. And that's something that I still see here in the digital world. You definitely have to know those technical skills, whether it be the platform to help you with Instagram or SEO or whatever it may be. But, you know, 70% of it is still having the right brand message.
You know, that's really excellent advice for anyone. So thank you so much for that. I want to switch gears for a moment and talk about social media influencers. I know they're all the rage right now. You know, one could say that you certainly are an influencer. I know when I'm on LinkedIn, like many others, as I'm scrolling through my feed, if I see someone with a lot of likes, that at least is an indication that that person may have something valuable to offer. And in doing so with you, you had a number of great things to offer, not only LinkedIn, but Twitter and also your blog and website. I was wondering, who though is your favorite social media influencer and why?
So thank you, Craig, for your nice words. I'm definitely the most active on LinkedIn, like you said, so I'm glad to hear that. I would say my favorite influencer on LinkedIn is Lila Smith. She is a Say Things Better coach, and I just think her posts are so valuable and really clear. So if anyone is on LinkedIn, I would really suggest looking at her posts. She developed the Say Things Better method, and I think that she's really the best in her field. So she's definitely my favorite on LinkedIn.
Yes, she's one of my favorites too. In fact, we've talked a little bit about her coming on to the show. So if you're listening, can't wait to have you on. Yeah, I would agree with you. There are others too, and I'm curious as to know what your opinion is about, say, a Gary Vaynerchuk, right? People have strong opinions about him. He is one who has strong opinions. Who else out there do you think is doing a good job in influencing on social media?
I like Gary. I know that there are, you know, there's a lot of controversy over his content, but I personally like him. I think from a marketing perspective, he does add value and he does give some motivational tips that are useful. So I'm a fan of his content personally, but I do understand the people who don't like it as well. And then, I don't know, switching gears a bit, I think that Ocasio-Cortez is just an incredible example of how we can use social media to support a political agenda in a really successful way. So I would say she's, you know, not a marketing person, but in the political realm, she's really an example to be seen.
Now, the reason why I laugh is because that was one of my extra questions I was going to ask you later on in our conversation. But let's start now. You know, from my research, it's clear that you have an interest in social issues and you keep up with the political goings on of our country. And Congresswoman Cortez has made a huge splash recently. In fact, I believe either Elle or Vogue wrote an article called How She Won the Election, One Instagram Post at a Time, and how she really used Instagram in a way that no one has yet. So tell me what it was that you really liked about the Congresswoman's work on Instagram.
I really love how she uses not only Twitter, but Instagram stories to really connect with the people. So she's constantly doing lives on Instagram as well, where people can ask her questions. So she's really available to people who want to ask her things. And I think, especially to a younger demographic, this type of conversation is really engaging to get younger people out there and ready to vote, and also get them aware of things that are happening in the political realm. So I really think she's doing an incredible job. And I loved that Vogue article you're mentioning about her, because I just think she's an incredible example. I mean, every time I personally go on Twitter, I either see something from her or someone else retweeting her. So she's really, really effective there.
So it sounds like engagement is the key, right? And I think that's really what really separates people who are sought after on social media and the ones who are not. You know, it's more than just about posting. And I talk a lot about this on the show. It's about not just communicating, but connecting. And that's where engagement comes from. So if you're looking for a job, if you're looking to form a team, you know, as an entrepreneur like yourself, or to build a community, it's all about engagement. At least that's the way I see it. Would you agree?
100%. It's all about engagement. I mean, if you look on LinkedIn, the people who are really making a difference are those that have high engagements on their posts and are also responding to people. So I would say for anyone out there who wants to, you know, get started and boost their personal branding, I would say first step one is just to engage with more people online. So if you're on LinkedIn, when you go on there, why not comment on a few videos that you found valuable and start a conversation with others? Because it's all about engagement and in the end, actually connecting with others instead of, you know, creating content that's just going to sit there and that nobody really finds valuable.
Excellent. So, you know, I know you deal with companies, but also individuals. And I was thinking there's a lot of talk right now about engagement pods and some controversy around it. For those who are listening, you know, an engagement pod is where a group of individuals essentially like one another's posts and comment on each other's posts, hopefully in all sincerity, not just a rubber stamp. But the idea is that the quicker you get engagement on a post, the more likely your post will filter into the activity feeds of other followers. And so you'll gain traction that way. How do you feel about engagement pods?
I definitely see engagement pods as, you know, having pros and cons. So on one hand, if you're starting out on LinkedIn and you don't have a lot of connections already and you know, you could be creating great content. I've seen some people that are creating really valuable content, but they're just starting out with their strategy. So it's only getting 20 likes and not that many people are seeing it. So in their case, using an engagement pod could really help them to, you know, interact with other people and really get started to get a bit of momentum on their page. Now, I think that other people abuse engagement pods and maybe they're in them too much and it becomes a bit spammy, and that's the con of it. But I think I'm not against engagement pods. I think if you can find the right niche, so, you know, say you're in, I don't know, the language sector. I have a friend that he's a language specialist and he runs a language school in Milan. So say he, and he makes great videos. So if he had another group of friends who are in the language space, their content is going to be interesting to one another. So I think if they created an engagement pod, there's nothing wrong with that. And they could all benefit from the content they're posting and also to like each other's posts, and probably they find it interesting anyway. But if you're in a huge engagement pod that I've seen some for Instagram, especially that just have a ton of people and it's just, you know, liking random people's content all day, I don't see the value there. And I do see it as a con in the community.
Interesting. I'm sure we'll hear more about engagement pods in the future. Just want to shift gears for just a moment, but I want to stay with LinkedIn. You've given some great tips, so thank you so much. I wonder if you could just identify some faux pas, things that people should stay away from when engaging on LinkedIn.
Definitely. So I think step one is to definitely optimize your LinkedIn profile. So I see a lot of people who just don't have good cover photos or good bios. And that's really a faux pas because you have to make it as easy as possible for people to contact you both on LinkedIn and off of LinkedIn. So either put a link in there to your website or your email address in your bio. And the other thing is with the cover photo, if you have your own business, it's often good to put a call to action that really speaks about your business so that it's really clear when someone clicks on your profile. So you always want to have your profile ready for when someone potentially clicks on it. I think another faux pas is when I see content posted on LinkedIn that maybe is not the best content for LinkedIn. So LinkedIn in the end is becoming more personal, and that's one of the things I love about the platform, but it is still the professional social media platform. So it is a professional place in nature. So I just think posting things that are a bit too personal could be better suited on Instagram or on a Facebook feed and don't really benefit your profile presence. So I would say those are the two big ones. Also, if you're doing videos, I would really suggest putting captions. That's just going to increase your engagement rates exponentially because many people watch videos while they're at work, so they can't listen to the sound. And that's also very easy to do nowadays. So there are some apps such as Clip-O-Matic or Clips where you can, you know, film your video right on your phone and the app actually puts the captions on there for you.
Wow, that's great. You've given us so many wonderful tips, and I think we can all benefit from it. I know I can. Want to shift gears for just a moment. Trends, future patterns. Where's marketing going? What do you see taking place in digital marketing, say, 5 years from now?
I definitely think that digital marketing is going to get more and more segmented. So I think that we will definitely see more social media platforms popping up that are even more segmented. So I don't know exactly what that will look like, but maybe one will pop up just for, you know, networking in the music industry or something like that. I think they're going to get even more specific than just as they are now, where, you know, Twitter is a bit more political, LinkedIn is more professional, Facebook's for everything, and Instagram is becoming more for everything, but also more B2B. So I think that's where they are now, but they're going to get even more segmented. That would be my biggest insight. And I think that online in general, everything related to digital is going to be much more optimized for voice. So we are, you know, talking into our phones much more than we used to. We're asking Siri or Google or Alexa to find us information. And I think that search engines and social media platforms are going to be more optimized for voice 5 years from now than they are now. There's also a lot of talk about virtual reality, artificial AR, things like that in ads. I think that may happen as well, but I am curious to see what will happen with different, you know, advertising on social media, just with all of the controversy going on now with, you know, Facebook data and things like that. So I'm not sure where that will head, but I'm curious to see.
Wow, that's interesting. You've got me thinking. You know, I really like music, and, you know, with the advent of YouTube and Instagram and either other and other platforms, you know, I finally have the opportunity to interact with the artists, right? People I've been listening to for years. Do you foresee an exclusive social media platform for music? I think that'd be an incredible platform.
I definitely think so, because I think that, you know, YouTube has just taken off over the past few years in that way, and that music has a way of, you know, definitely looking into having its own social media platform. So I haven't seen any yet, but I really feel like that's where it can go, because like you said, this interaction between the consumer and the fan, or the fan and the actual musician, is a really powerful one.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to that. Maybe that's your next project. You have to keep me posted if it is, or if you're looking for a business partner.
Exactly. This was a good brainstorming.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've reached the part of the discussion called what if, and, you know, our previous questions I kind of prepped you for, but this is where I throw some hypotheticals out at you to get your first response. And it's based on some of the things that we've already discussed. What if you were able to be the chief digital marketing officer for any NGO or non-for-profit organization? Which organization would you choose? And what are some of the things you would do?
That's a great question. So one of my best friends volunteered for IMU, which basically helps refugees in Greece. And living in Europe, I've seen, you know, a lot of people who have needed help around the refugee crisis. So I think I would want to help either with that NGO or one in the same section, the same, you know, area of refugees. And what I would do is I would probably try to increase awareness on social media and also work with Facebook ads to increase their donations. Because I think if some of these NGOs had a larger budget for Facebook ads, they could definitely get, of course, it's clear why they don't have a larger budget, but if they could have a larger budget, I think that they could really get a lot more donations, especially around the holiday season, as more and more people are like donating instead of giving gifts to their friends. So that's something I think I would really, really like to help with. I'm actually going to start working with one NGO that helps to create recycled soap in different countries in Africa. And that's one of the things I would like to help them with as well, is drive donations through, you know, Facebook and different paid advertisements on social media.
Well, Kimberly, I hope you really get to do those things, and I wish you much success in that endeavor. Just switching gears for a moment again, we'll stick with the number five. Where do you see yourself 5 months from now, 5 years from now? And tell us, you know, the context around that.
I think in 5 months, I will be happy still living here in Milan, speaking at more conferences, because I just love to connect with different people that I've met at some of the conferences I've spoken at this past year, and being able to share my expertise sometimes with people that may not get it because we don't collaborate on a professional basis. But I've been able to do that by helping people at conferences with speeches about personal branding, social selling, and key digital marketing trends in the US and Europe. So I would definitely love to see myself 5 months doing more of that in my business, because that really energizes me. I would love to work with more NGOs as well, just because that is really important to be able to help and give back in that way, as related to, you know, still my professional agenda. And then in 5 years, I would really like to see my business growing, make it even more remote. And I'm not sure where I will live. It really energizes me to move around. So maybe I'll still be living here or move back to the US. I'm not sure about that. But my goals are to really make my company more remote, more global, and clear with my values. So, you know, still being able to donate about 20% of my time to working on projects in the NGO or nonprofit sectors, and, you know, build a remote business where it can be as inclusive as possible with the people I'm hiring.
Wow, that's great. You know, I go back to Congresswoman Ocasio and that article that was written about her. In it, the author writes, "She makes politics seem relatable, doable, possible for any young person watching." And I think you, Kimberly, do the same thing when it comes to marketing on LinkedIn. You make it relatable, doable, and possible. And so I think anyone who follows you, and I encourage people to follow Kimberly Afonso, A-F-O-N-S-O, as you will learn a lot. But could you tell us how else we could get in contact with you, watch you, engage with you, and potentially collaborate with you?
No, thank you so much, Craig. I definitely would love to connect with everyone on LinkedIn. I always accept connection requests, so I would love to connect there. And if not there, my website is KimberlyAfonso.com. And I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. They're both just at Kimberly Afonso. So it's pretty easy. No one else has my name. So I'm happy to connect on any of those platforms. And thank you for your nice words. I would love to, you know, be compared in any way, any day, to Ocasio-Cortez. So thank you for that.
Well, it's my pleasure. And so happy that you are our first guest. I think we started off on a high here on our show, and I hope that we can speak again.
Thank you, Craig. And thank you for everything you're doing with your podcast. I think it's really making a great contribution. So I really look forward to listening and seeing who else you will bring on the show in the future.
Thanks, Kimberly. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much again for joining me. It would mean so much if you would comment, like, and certainly subscribe to this podcast. We'll be updating it frequently with a variety of guests, so please stay tuned.